Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up, we've got stories from the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO, including Dayton Youth Radio and Veterans Voices. We've also got several health reports you may be interested in. And later in the program, Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. Up first, in recent years, research has shown that post-traumatic stress disorder can be helped with expressive writing. Today on Veterans Voices, Marine Corps veteran Chris Bussler of Harveysburg tells his wife Wendy about a creative strategy he found to cope with the stress of his multiple deployments. Just a warning that some listeners may find elements of this story disturbing.
My job there on my third tour was I was a forward operating mortuary affairs Marine. So what that means, I was a forward operating body bagger. My job there being at the collection point would be if somebody who had gotten killed, they would bring those the remains in, and then we would go through and annotate the wounds suffered, go through their pockets and try to collect all of their personal effects and start the paperwork on them and arrange transportation back to the States. And there'd be some days that we may get one guy, and then there's some evenings we may get 13. And being in a environment that was a high-velocity environment with all these big IEDs that were going off, these big roadside bombs, that when you get these bags, there are a lot of them are just, you know, parts. And out of my three tours, my third tour was the absolute the worst.
It was the one that broke you.
What broke me wasn't so much doing the job, because I looked at it as taking care of those guys who were there. But what drove me nuts is when I came home, everything that I had suppressed started to manifest, and it wouldn't go away. It was there when I opened up my eyes, and I would sit down and eat dinner and stuff, and there was things about, you know, the things that were on my plate that would remind me of them. And when you closed your eyes at night, that, you know, that's all you saw was them.
What helped you get through those times?
At first, all I did was drink. I was what they call a functional alcoholic. I mean, I was drinking myself, hopefully, to where I wouldn't be able to remember anything. You know, I felt guilty for being alive when all so many guys had gotten killed. And so we went over to the VFW. And there was an evening that I was talking to Mike, the guy, a Vietnam veteran. He was a corpsman in Vietnam. And he goes, what you need to do is to start writing your story down. And when you're done with a particular story, burn it. And at first I thought it was, oh, this is hokey. You know, this guy's the hippie from back in the 60s. He smoked too much stuff. But I did what he asked me to do. Then I did it again and again and again and again. And eventually I started feeling better, because now I felt like I had power over those stories. Now I could get rid of that burden by burning that story.
That was Marine Corps veteran Chris Bussler talking with his wife, Wendy. This conversation took place at WISO as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative, which visited the Miami Valley last summer. Veterans Voices on WISO is presented by WritePad Credit Union with additional support from CareSource. This story was edited by Seth Gordon and Will Davis. Thank you. Well, Ohio is home to one of the largest Amish populations in the country. Many of the Amish settlements overlap with rural Appalachian counties, where access to health care is hard to come by. Ohio Public Radio's Paige Flager reports on a project that is trying to bring breast cancer screenings to Amish women.
It's a typical mammogram room. If you went to a hospital, it would look exactly the same.
Valerie Rice is a mammographer, and she's dressed like one, too. Her shirt is covered in pink breast cancer awareness ribbons.
You know, it's nothing really different, except that it's in a moving vehicle.
This exam room is on wheels. A large coach bus, pink, of course. Snow is falling in the parking lot outside, and horses are tied up to poles in the frozen ground. Today, the mobile mammography unit is parked at the Mennonite Christian Assembly Church in Fredericksburg, Ohio, within a buggy ride's distance from some of the largest Amish settlements in the country.
Really what we like to say is like to bridge the gap between the culture of Amish and Mennonite communities and the culture of healthcare.
Melissa Thomas is the director of the Center for Appalachia Research and Cancer Education, which focuses on cancer disparities in those communities. She organizes mobile clinics, like this one, about 25 times a year.
We try to find screening locations that are in the most remote sections of the state, that are serving more than likely a more conservative group of Amish that may not have access or availability into the local hospital systems.
The majority of Ohio's Amish settlements are in Appalachian counties, where cancers that can be detected by preventative testing occur at higher rates. The Amish don't participate in the census, where cancer rates are usually found, so there is little data available. Thomas says what she has found in her own research of Ohio settlements is startling.
What really surprised us was the higher death rate of breast cancer among Amish women in these two regions. And what was disturbing to us is that the leading cause of death of Amish women under the age of 60 was breast cancer.
Beyond distance, there are other reasons Amish women underutilize methods like mammograms. There's a language barrier. Some in the community are more comfortable speaking German than English. And cost can be an impediment, too. The Amish don't participate in the health insurance market. Instead, they pull money for procedures from a group fund. Plus, many Amish women say they don't know what resources are available.
That was the way with me when I had my diagnosis. What do I do? Where do I go? You know, I felt like being out in the boonies about it.
Ella Miller is 80 years old, Amish, and a 30-year survivor of breast cancer. She's a community health worker with the project.
People think that a mammogram will cause cancer. It's very hard to get that out of their mind.
Research shows the majority of Amish women underestimate breast cancer risk and are more likely to believe that sort of myth. Miller says that makes it difficult to get women in the door. In nearby Holmes County, for example, a community health assessment found that about 60% of non-Amish residents had had mammograms, while only 20% of Amish women had. And if they receive positive test results, it can be even more difficult to encourage them to seek medical intervention.
There are some people that think that is meant to be, and that was God's plan in their life. And there are those that they refuse treatment, and whenever their life ends, so be it.
She feels her mastectomy years ago gave her a chance to fulfill her greater purpose, to help other women in her community.
You should still do what needs to be done so God can heal you, because you need to help yourself somewhat. Yes, God will help you, but you also have to do your part.
After a diagnosis, the project helps connect women with nearby hospital systems for further care. Then the mobile clinic rolls on to another settlement in the state. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Paige Flager.
And in other health news, across the country, nearly 95,000 people are waiting for a kidney transplant, and that list has been growing for years. As Side Effects Public Media's Natalie Krebs reports, this has pushed some people to try unusual ways to find donors.
Larry Burkholder is 72 and has chronic kidney disease. The Iowa man was put on the list for a new kidney last March, but was told the average wait is a long one.
Well, they say usually it's typically 3.5 years or so. 3.5 to 5, I think.
Burkholder turned to Facebook to see if he could find someone to donate a kidney, but no one stepped up.
Well, a lot of support and prayers, but not a whole lot. Nobody really said, wow, I'll give one, you know.
Then Burkholder had another idea. He put a big custom vinyl sticker on the back window of his blue Hyundai Sonata.
It says, Larry needs a kidney! Exclamation mark. Any blood type, and then my phone number.
Stickers are also on the cars of his wife, daughter, and a friend. Burkholder says so far he's gotten a few calls, but none has worked out.
One person wanted me to violate a federal law and wanted to know how much money I'd give him for a kidney because they were in financial trouble. I told him that's a federal law. You can't do that. So
nationally, about 80% in line for an organ transplant are waiting for a kidney. Alan Reed is the director of the transplant program at the University of Iowa. He says an increasing number of people have medical conditions that cause kidney failure.
And so the largest percentage of people being added to the list have diabetes and high blood pressure.
As baby boomers age, more older patients are being added to the list. And he says all these factors have created a simple problem of supply and demand. More than 3,800 people died last year waiting for a kidney, including 18 in Iowa, where Larry Burkholder lives.
We're not growing the available kidneys to transplant as quickly as there is a need.
The number of kidneys from deceased donors has rapidly increased in the past few years, due in part to the opioid epidemic. But the number of living donors has remained flat for years, and there still aren't enough kidneys to meet the growing demand overall. Reed says to get a kidney faster, he encourages his patients to reach out to their community. Still, there aren't many incentives for donors.
They may have to be out of work for a period of time. They may have to travel and need food and lodging. There's actually ways you can get compensated for that. But they don't necessarily get compensated for all the risk that they take.
Reed says he'd like to change that because there are economic and medical benefits for patients to have a living donor.
That kidney will work better, will work faster, will get you out of the hospital sooner, and will cost society substantially less. You may not have to go on dialysis. You may not need dialysis access, and will last you longer than any deceased donor kidney that you can get.
Des Moines resident Sandy Feierstein looked for a donor on Facebook because she has a rare blood type.
With my blood type, they told me it could be 3 to 5 years, which also means I could eventually go on dialysis to try to save my life before a kidney becomes available.
The 62-year-old has Buerger's disease, which keeps her kidneys from filtering blood properly. She was put on the list last April. Feierstein's Facebook post was shared more than 90 times. It caught the eye of Lynn Susick, who lives in a Des Moines suburb. She volunteered, saying she's always wanted to donate.
I just think that we should give back however we can. So to me, whether it was someone I knew or someone I don't know, Sandy, even though I've never met her, she's just as important to me.
Susick, who is 59, says she's not worried about living with only one kidney.
I have researched it, and there's no discernible difference for people that in terms of lifespan if you have one kidney or two.
Susick also says missing weeks of work during recovery isn't an issue.
I'm very lucky that I am retired and don't need to worry about that.
Sandy Feierstein's wait isn't over. Susick still needs to complete testing to see if she's a match before she can donate. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Natalie Krebs.
Side Effects Public Media is a news collaborative covering public health in the Midwest. You can find more stories like that on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend.
Blast off and chill out every Sunday night on Alpha Rhythms. I'm Juliet Frumholt. Join me for ambient, electronic, and new age music that will transport you through space and time. Your week ends and begins Sunday nights from 8 to 11 p.m. with Alpha Rhythms here on 91.3 WYSO.
This is a new and strange environment at first, this suddenly finding yourself in orbit.
I'm Renee Wild, the producer of County Lines, that takes listeners into the small towns and rural communities around the Miami Valley.
When I get up in the morning and that first brave little soul, that bird that starts chirping and everything comes to life and that sun's coming over the hill, and you can see the breath from your livestock, you hear them crunching as they're coming to meet you. In that moment, I'm communing with God.
Join me for County Lines, on the air and online.
My name's Julie Garrigan, CEO of Garrigans.com, and I am just happy as a clam to underwrite WISO. As far as what sponsorship has meant to our company, we have come across people in our business dealings that say, hey, I heard Garrigans on WISO this morning. I didn't know you advertised. We find that it's a good way to help quickly establish rapport. There's an instant trust with that name recognition.
To learn more, contact Luke Dennis at 769-1379.
This is WISO Weekend on WISO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Once again, thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. This week on Dayton Youth Radio, Centerville High School student Dorian Mays shares her reflections on the tragic shooting that happened in the city's Oregon District this summer.
I remember going to the Oregon District with my family back in February. I was with my mom and aunts because they were getting matching tattoos. I remember eating spicy and lemon pepper wings at Blind Bob's with my uncle and sister. We were getting hungry while waiting for my mom and aunts to have their tattoos finished. It was February, so it was a bit chilly. Partly cloudy, but that didn't stop the smiles and laughter from the people walking around. My family knows people who work and hang out in that area. Our family friend Peanut would gig with his band sometimes, and my dad's friend Pistol used to have a food truck in the district. From my perspective, the Oregon District seems like a great place for adults and college students to hang out with their friends, get drinks, and tattoos. Close to 10 a.m. on Sunday, August 4th, I woke up to my sister Layla calling my name. It was the way she was calling out to me that woke me up, because anytime her voice was shaky or she seemed uneasy, I knew something was wrong. I asked her what was wrong, and honestly, I wish I hadn't. In less than 60 seconds, Connor Betts killed 9 people and injured 32 people near Ned Pepper's Bar in the Oregon District. Betts was killed about 30 seconds after he opened fire. Knowing that this happened so close to home put a different type of fear in me. Lois Ogilby, Nicholas Coomer, Logan Turner, Thomas McNichols, Derek Fudge, Monica Brickhouse, Saeed Saleh, Beatrice Warren Curtis, and Connor Betts' own sister, Megan Betts. For the victims who survived, their families, and the business owners in the area, I am so sorry that we live in a world where we have to be so cautious everywhere we go. I am so sorry that you have to live with this pain for the rest of your life. It may not be easy to move forward, but you all have stories to tell. Tell your story until you are heard. There is very little change happening right now when it comes to gun control and ways to monitor who is able to purchase a weapon. Yet, the ban on e-cigarettes is moving very fast. As soon as the first teenager was pronounced dead from vaping, the FDA and the government were all over it. But as soon as a bunch of people were gunned down, in less than 30 seconds, all they gave were their condolences and a bunch of ideas as to what we need to do, but we're yet to see these ideas be put into place. It worries me every day going to my first period class not knowing that a young man could get triggered by anything, and the next thing you know, I'm dead, my friends are dead, and my parents are burying me before I have to bury them. We live in a country where people have the right to bear arms, and time after time, history shows that right being abused. In the United States of America, you can buy a gun before you can buy a beer. How does that make you feel? I'm a teenager. I go to high school where I should be living my best life. I should be focused on my education, my extracurricular activities, right? But when I go to school, I'm constantly wondering in the back of my mind, is something going to happen? Am I going to have to be ready to run out of here at any moment? There's literally a kid in my history class who like openly said that his favorite activity or like pastime was guns. He likes to shoot guns and stuff for fun. Do you know how scary it is to sit in the class with that kid? At this point, it doesn't even matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter your gender. It doesn't matter your sexuality. You could be laughing, hanging out with your friends, But then the next thing you know, you, one of them, or all of you are just gone the next second. We really living in a country where you can get a gun before you can even drink. And I don't like that.
That was A Moment of Silence, written and produced by Dorian Mays, a senior at Centerville High School. Special thanks to Dorian's teacher, Trisha Rapak. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
For more Dayton Youth Radio stories, visit our website at wyso.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first full week of early winter, the third week of the silent cricket moon, the third week of the sun in Sagittarius. I wander into the fields and woods this soft and cloudy morning. Clover is keeping the paths green, along with some dandelions and some plantain. Wind rustles the dry grass and the brittle leaves. I can hear distant crows, but no other birds for the first mile, and then the whinny of a robin as though it were frightened and had been attacked. Crane flies follow me up into high prairie. Moss is still bright beside me, becomes the dominant green in the woods. A few red raspberry branches and a bank of honeysuckles keep their leaves. Nettles, protected by wild roses, grow back in the valley. Teasel is dark and stiff in the dull goldenrod fields. The fruits of the osage tree are all yellow on the ground. The lichens lie on the rocks, pale greens and pastels. Then I watch the landscape down the valley, bands of grays and browns above the sky of stratus clouds strangely glowing from the hidden sun. The trees are black, pasture chartreuse, a cross-section of the winter veins of this particular time. On the footbridge, walnut, hulls have been shredded by squirrels staining the wood purple. Coming back, I hear a pair of flickers and they screech then fly off toward the river. Near the water, I startle three small tan moths that struggle to escape through the cold. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the first full week of early winter. In the meantime, watch the fragments of the old year. Now they're becoming the pieces of a new season, early winter, the first season of the new year.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, building a more informed community with independent news and storytelling. I'm Jerry Kenney. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Thanks again for joining us. Up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.
Are you current? Are you with it? Are you at the front of the line of what is? The leading edge of now, holding the reins of what will be? Do you get it? Are you up for it? Down with it? In the news? On the beat? You can be. How, you ask? Become a sustaining member of WYSO. Do it now. Not that now. This now. You won't just be recent. You won't just be fresh. Not just up to the minute. You'll be current. You will be what's happening. It is never too late to get up to date. Become a sustaining member of WYSO. Get current. And keep it that way. At WYSO.org.
New Orleans grew from a mix of French, Spanish, and African cultures. Creole musicians joined in the creation of jazz, says our guest, clarinetist Charlie Gabriel. When jazz spread to Texas, Western swing was born and continues today with the Cuevas sisters. Join me for Creoles and Cowgirls on American Roots from PRX.
Saturday night at 10 and Sunday evening at 6 on 91.3 WYSO.
Maybe you start your day with coffee. Or at the gym. No matter how or when your day begins, start it with Morning Edition from NPR News, a unique mix of national, global, and local stories, now available on demand, weekdays from 7 to 3. Just say, Alexa, play Morning Edition. Morning Edition, on your schedule, from NPR News.
That's Morning Edition from WYSO.